Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
The corn made new yearly highs this week, and our Thursday meteorologist told us a dirty little secret about Iowa. We'll find out if those two things can go together yet this season to push the market even higher. That all happens today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
And welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Mitch Dawson. He's the central merchandiser for Gold Eagle Co-op out of Goldfield, Iowa. Our panelists today are Tom Mann of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, and Dwayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Wayne, can corn push to 260 and then on up to $2.80 a bushel?
Well, we're pretty sure about the 260 part, Todd, because we've already been there on Friday. But the 280 part, that's going to be another question. Now, we've got some very strong resistance, 272, 275, and 277, as far as technical points go. And also, will it be the GFS model or the other models that verify next week? Will we have 6 to 10 days of hot weather above 95 out in Iowa? If it does, we'll probably push up there.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Tom Mann of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois.
Yeah, I think we can get back to that 280, maybe 285, 287. If you go back to 2002, we're setting ourselves up for a very similar situation there where we carried in a fairly sizable crop and then ended up having a smaller than normal crop and carried out something around 1.1 billion bushels. So that year we were in that 285 area, so I think it's extremely possible.
This week at the Chicago Board of Trade, September corn had a high of 258.5, the low at 220.5. Now that range includes the lead option, so that is July from last week to September Friday of this week, so it's wider than you might have expected. September contract at 257.75, settlement price on your lead option chart up 31.5 cents from last week's settlement, which would have been the July on Friday. December contract, $2.68 a bushel, 23.75 higher. From the wheat pit, September contract, a high this week at 349.5, the low at 320. Same goes here. July expired on Thursday, so we're using July numbers and September numbers for the lead option chart. September wheat settled at 348.5 for your lead, up 20 cents. And December wheat at 362.25, up 11 for the week. September oats, $1.82.5 a bushel. They were up 13.5 for the week. On Tuesday, USDA released its crop production and WASDE numbers. Corn came across like this. The estimate for the total crop size in the United States at 10.785 billion bushels, and the carryout for this year at 2.115 billion for this year and for next year at 2.24 billion bushels. Those numbers at all worth anything by the end of the week, Wayne?
Well, sure they are, Todd, because they're beginning points to work from. And we have to remember that those are 2 weeks old now. Those were done for the 1st of July. And we've had a lot of negative weather towards production since that point in time. So, you know, we take in consideration what the crop rains have been, what we figure the damage during pollination in some of the areas where it's been extremely warm and extremely dry. That's when we start figuring where we're at and what we're going to have. And, of course, the numbers that we're looking at today and the way the market's talking about them, we have lower numbers than that.
Tom, what's the best you're hearing from farmers about their crops and the worst you're hearing?
Well, it all depends upon where you're at. I was in northern Illinois on Tuesday up in the Altoona area, so obviously I traveled from Champaign all the way through that Bloomington, Peoria area, and it's crop specific, I guess you'd have to say. It depends on what variety you're raising, but there's some up there where the tops are dying, the tassels are all laid over. And, of course, I was window shopping, and it did not appear that a lot of the crop had any silks on it. So, obviously, it's not going to nick and no ear, obviously.
And what are you hearing from your producers?
Well, Todd, I think it's greatly varied, just like we said there. There's some areas, within a three-mile county area of where I'm at, the crops look really pretty good. We've been blessed with timely rains, and things look good as long as we continue to get timely rains. Last Saturday, I drove to Indianapolis on Route 136 and over between Jamestown and Claremont over there. The crops were pathetic. We talked to our other office up in Sandwich, Illinois, and the crops around there are greatly stressed. If we look at DeKalb, LaSalle County, and all of them up in that area, they're really hurting. We talked to people in Iowa. Things look great. They're just hoping for not too hot a weather. And, I mean, you know, they're looking just as good as last year. So we've got everything on the book out there, Todd. It's just going to be how much more gets hurt. We've already got some hurt.
How does your advice differ for the folks that are around New Market, Indiana, and the folks that are around Sandwich, Illinois, where crops are good and not so good?
Well, I think it looks at what you're calling a percentage of your crop. I mean, we can sell the same percentages if we look at things. It's just that they better take their number down on what they're, if they were figuring 180 bushels up in DeKalb County, they maybe better not figure that anymore. So, but along the way, I think timing is still the market you look at things. So, you know, they just have to look and say, I'm probably not going to produce near as much.
Is this one of those years where you can look at the marketplace at this point and say, okay, from here on out, this is going to be a market price that probably we're going to be at and higher than? Is this marketplace going to run through the next 7 or 8 months higher or trade above this? Or is it just not known yet?
Well, fundamentally, it should trade higher, but unfortunately, fundamentals don't have much control over the market anymore. You have basically funds in control, and essentially, my attitude is they do it more based on economics. I think they see how large the fund positions are and then what's excess over the fund positions, and then they whack those folks and put the money in their pockets.
This week we heard a couple of times that processors look to be caught relatively short in the corn. Do you think there will be an opportunity?
Well, obviously my wife works for ADM, so I know they're feeling the crunch. And essentially, she asked me, she said, what would you do if you were in my position right now? And my bias is there's a lot of old crop to be had out there. And with futures running up, you need to be working on that basis level and getting it in there and get it before somebody else does. So, you know, you got obligations to cover going into new crops, so got to cover it somehow.
One of the things that we saw this week in print, Todd, was that end users need to do some coverage, but also spend a little money and buy some puts in case it does rain graciously through the western states, through northern Illinois, and saves us from being a disastrous crop, because we're only two good rains away from not being the disaster that we were all talking about.
Interesting that you said two good rains away. On Friday afternoon, when we talked with Steve Hilbert, who's the climatologist, not a meteorologist, but a climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey and the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, he talked about potentially two good rains that might come through across much of the Midwest next week. What are you hearing from other meteorologists that you speak with?
Well, the private meteorologists that we've consulted with and looked at and followed don't agree with that forecast, Todd. That doesn't mean they're right. That means they just don't agree today in what they're looking at. The GFS system has been putting a lot more rain into the forecast than the other models have, and it has not materialized in most cases. So, you know, we're going to stay with what's been working. The directional winds, the highs seem to be keeping out Emily, or seem that they would be keeping Emily from coming through the Midwest and giving us the rains that we would love to have.
On earlier in the week, Emerson Nafziger, who's University of Illinois Extension agronomist, wrote an article suggesting that 15% to 20% of the Illinois crop had been deteriorated out of the market, or not out of the market, but out of the crop size already for this year. What's your feeling from your travels? How much of it's gone?
Well, it could be greater than that. Obviously, it depends upon when some of this crop was planted, the maturity of it. I don't care how many more rains you have. Some of the corn I saw headed north is not going to make anything anyway. I mean, there's no ear to be had, so you can't do anything with it. But as Wayne said, some of these great areas, and I live in a great area, Tuscola, and it's had timely rains. I'm not going to say we've had excess, but the crop looks good. We've got silks turning brown already, so that crop is going to materialize. And if we get something to fill a cob, you know, that's going to be great. And we haven't talked about beans yet. Beans are still sitting there. I mean, they're waiting for that magical rain, and one or two rains at the right time will finish them out. I have seen in my lifetime where we had 60 bushel corn and 60 bushel beans, and it was just attributed to a late rain that came just at the right time.
Yeah, we haven't talked very much about beans at all. Let's do that now in the bean market for the week. Futures finished like this. Remember, the lead option changed, so we were on July's, now we're on the August. August contract for the beans had a high this week of $7.38 as a lead option. The low was at $6.55¾. That was made, by the way, in the overnight trade on Sunday evening. And the settlement price at $7.21, up 45.5 cents from last week's settlement in the July bean contract. That settlement price, of course, for your lead option, August. Now, November beans, $7.24½. They were up 36.5 cents. From last week. Actually, it was a fairly impressive week when you really started looking at the bean market, up 45¾ cents. Not too terribly bad, but it was awfully, awfully volatile through a good portion of this week.
I think that's an understatement, Todd. The volatility was tremendous. On Thursday, we went up and touched 750 and then backed off as hard as we did. Actually traded lower on the day. Just on the variations of the different forecasts and which ones the funds seem to be following or going with at the time. And I think that there was also some resistance and some sales up there. But we've had some very volatile activity in the beans for really not being in the critical stage of growth like we are in the corn.
And soybeans, the USDA numbers look like this for the week. 2.89 billion bushels is their working number for this year's crop size. Carry out for this season, 290 million, and carry out for next season at 210 million bushels. Any of those numbers really make too much difference in the
marketplace? Not at this point. No, it's just too early in the game to really be dictating carryouts. You could probably tweak the corn a little bit. I think that's a given that it's going to be somewhat lower than what the government's showing. So, but as far as beans are concerned, we can still have a really decent crop on them.
So you're working with farmers saying just use a normal number.
Right. Basically, that's about all you can do at this point.
Same with you?
Puts are very expensive, but I think that someday are something to really be looking at closely here, Todd, because we don't know that number, and we can move extreme amounts very fast. In the night trade last week, we moved 40 cents in beans. So an at-the-money put at 50 cents, how expensive really is it if we can move 40 cents in one nighttime trade? Not the daytime trade, but just in the nighttime trade in one night. So we have to be thinking very seriously about using puts in this market for the person that doesn't want to risk probably those 50-cent moves like we've been seeing in the beans. But we are a little bit favorable to the market going a little higher here, just out of the respect that we believe that the weather is going to be a little rougher than and not as kind looking at things. So we're going to wait just a little while to buy those.
On that note, give me your upside potential, you think, for beans under normal growing conditions the rest of the way out of the season, and for corn as well. What's your?
Well, normal growing conditions says that we inch on back downward, Todd. The weather forecast that I'm believing for over the weekend says we inch on up a little bit. I think we're going to probably try to test $8 beans. At least come close to it if the weather stays dry. If it does, if we start getting rains, which we agree that beans have plenty of time to make it in a lot of the areas, we can inch on back down $1.50 from here.
I don't disagree with that. I think we'll test the $8 mark on soybeans. A lot to be said for rainfall patterns again. As Wayne was saying, you just have to be protective of what you've got and what you've got done. If you've got sales on, you might even want to get some calls over them to protect against an upside move. So, it's kind of a mix and match deal, but it looks to me like $8 on beans. And corn, I think right now we're still stuck at that 280, 285 area.
And this is a bit of an offbeat question. What's more important this week, the USDA crop production and WASD numbers released, or the work Congress has done to push the energy bill and WERDA, that's the bill to update the locks and dams on the Illinois and Mississippi rivers?
Well, I would have to say the energy bill is much more important because that's going to last a long time. It's going to help us move some corn, get ethanol plants going and looking good. And I think that's very, very important to U.S. agriculture.
We'll talk more about ethanol plants in just a few moments when we have Mitch Dawson on from Gold Eagle Co-op in Goldfield, Iowa. They are involved in a couple of different ethanol plants out in their area.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Rainfall from the remnants of Hurricane Dennis ate away at the edges of the drought in Illinois, but left much of northern Illinois with only scattered showers. The big winners this week were southern Illinois and portions of central and east central Illinois, which received anywhere from 3/4 to 2 inches of rain in general. In far southern Illinois, it was almost too much of a good thing, with Cairo receiving more than 5 inches of rain in 2 days. The greatest coverage of rain was in southern Illinois, generally south of I-64, with showers becoming increasingly more scattered the farther north you went. What was left of Dennis continued to trigger some widely scattered showers in the southeastern half of the state late into the week. Temperatures this week range from 6 degrees below normal in the south to 2 degrees below normal in central Illinois, where cloud cover from Dennis remained most of the week. In northern Illinois, where sunshine was more abundant, temperatures ranged from near normal to 4 degrees above. Hot, humid conditions will start out the third week of July. A cold front is forecast to move into Illinois late Monday and Tuesday, and that holds some promise for triggering some showers and thunderstorms across Illinois as it presses south. It won't be a drought breaker, but any rain is welcome at this point. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu. Click on AM and then on Agriculture.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today on Commodity Week are Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Tom Mann of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. In a moment, we'll talk with Mitch Dawson. Very quickly, updating the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange, live cattle this week had a high in the August contract of 79.80, a low at 78.05, and the settlement price there at 78.52.5 at the Merc, down 72.5 cents from last week. August feeder cattle at 106.15 were off $5.82.5. July lean hog 68.80, the high, the low at 67.60, and the settlement price at $68.67.5, up 57.5 from last week. Friday afternoon and morning both about updates on the Canadian border and beef cattle being able to come across in all forms as USDA plans to open up that border via an injunction overturn that happened in the Ninth Circuit Court. Will that make much of a difference in the marketplace over the next year if more Canadian beef come in? And I suppose we ought to talk both about beef and hogs in this case.
Well, Todd, first off, it's going to hit the feeder cattle first, which it did on the market today. Feeder cattle being down over $2 because Canadian feeder cattle are quite a bit less than the American feeder cattle have been. Also, it's under 30-month cattle, so it's not going to hit the fats as bad as the feeders. As far as the pork, yeah, I mean, we're going to have more total meat available, so we look forward to step in that way. We saw the cutouts being a little bit lower in the pork on Friday at noon, and we also saw that some of the cash indexes were a little lower on Friday. So the total impact is just a little bit negative, but overall, we had a lot of the plants that we're going to have to lay people off, so it did keep us jobs by reopening the border for those people in the packing plants.
Our guest today on Commodity Week is Mitch Dawson. Mitch is a native of central Illinois out of Lovington, who graduated from the University of Illinois in 1979. He's been involved in the grain industry ever since. He's got experience with the soy processing industry and currently serves as grain merchandising manager for Gold Eagle Cooperative. That's a large cooperative with 9 locations located in north central Iowa. They have an annual grain volume of about 22 million bushels of corn and 5 to 6 million bushels of soybeans. Gold Eagle Cooperative also has a very large animal feed business and is presently involved with the construction of an ethanol plant along with some local investors at its facility in Goldfield, Iowa. Mitch, welcome.
Welcome, gentlemen.
So are farmers there worried yet about the potential for dry weather conditions to put a damper on their corn harvest?
Well, to listen to you, what you guys have talked about, I guess I'm going to give you the Paul Harvey rest of the story. we are in a good situation presently. We've had very ample rains. We're off to a very, very good start. We're starting to get into the middle of pollination. We're a little warm. We maybe are taking the very, very top of this market on yield potential out, but still we're going to have a much above normal yield potential in the state of Iowa.
And for soybeans, too?
Soybeans are a little bit harder to call. They look good right now. Obviously, as you hit the warm weather, the 90 to 92, 93 degrees, the lighter soils will start to suffer and have started to suffer a little bit. But overall, all in all, it looks very good.
This dirty little secret we referred to earlier in the broadcast was from Peter Levitt, who talked about on Thursday afternoon with us Iowa and the potential for Iowa and Nebraska to go dry very quickly simply because climatologically from here on out, they really don't get very much rain. Does your experience in the state tell you that's the case or not?
You know, it's hard to talk that right now when the tiles are still running. And I say that, you know, even though we haven't had good measurable rain in about 14 days, we have ample subsoil moisture. The lighter soiled ground, especially like when you talk into Nebraska on the dry land area, maybe in southern Iowa, which is not a big production area, very eastern Iowa, very hilly ground to the northeast, those areas might suffer a little bit. But the good soils that have the good soil moisture right now, bluntly, guys, it's summer. That's typical. And we're in a good position. We'll be able to weather this storm pretty good. Now, that said, you 2 weeks of it, that I can tell a different game maybe.
Mitch, as you look out there then, if you're that good, what do you think the national crop will be this year? Will it be below 10.5 or will it be above 10.5?
Well, let's go one other side that I don't think anybody's covered as of yet, and that is getting the acreage correct on corn. As you guys know, the AFCS office, the farmers have to get that verification in by the 15th of July. What we're hearing from a lot of county offices, both here in Iowa and over in Illinois, that the ASCS offices are astounded about the number of corn acres that they're seeing. So has the USDA missed this acreage report by 3 or 4% in Iowa and Illinois? If that's the case, then we have a lot hard time pegging this production level. So I guess I'm going to say that the state of Iowa is still 3 to 4% too low on corn acres, Illinois 2 to 3% low on corn acres. Given everything that we see right now, I think we're looking at a 10.5, 10.6.
Okay. I have heard the increasing corn acres, but my understanding is, too, and I don't know how much you venture into Minnesota, but they were very wet early, got planted late, and now they're starting to dry out similarly to you, only they have no root system. Have you heard anything out of that state?
We actually stretched to within, my territory stretches within 15 miles of the southern Minnesota border. I would tell you in travels in that area, that crop is looking fantastic. Remember last year they had a problem with excessive rains and cool weather and never really got the corn to roll out very well at all. This year, this heat has just been a savior for them. Even though it went in late, it's looking fantastic. You're going to see increases over the, maybe not on this report, but when we get to the final report, you're going to be surprised at yield calculations out of Minnesota. Nebraska, you may have seen your best yield potential on the weekly crop reports that happened a week ago. And we'll probably go downhill from there. But Minnesota is going to be one of the surprise states for you as you go forward. People are calling for problems, but those problems aren't there.
Can you, speaking of last year, can you compare last year? I know last year at this time we were talking about Iowa still being drenched and having a tough time in that area, and then Minnesota, as you said, being awfully wet, awfully cold, and then
right.
And then having really, really good yields in there. Are you looking at better conditions this year than you, I guess you are at this point, but do you think you have more yield potential this year than you did last year?
Let's clarify. Last year you had a statewide yield Iowa about 181 bushel. You're not going to have that, obviously, this year. Everything went perfect. It was cool in August. It was cool in September. Ample rain in August and September to help fill out that crop. But if you rate last year as a 1 to 10 was an 11, we're probably sitting at a very high 8 right now on this Iowa crop as we sit today. Minnesota may actually even be at 8.5 to 9. You know, last year Minnesota probably sat at about a 7. So when you look at overall condition in this part of the country, we're still looking for a heck of a big crop. Another thing that I think needs to be mentioned is we have a huge, huge amount of corn that is still in farmer hands and elevator hands right now of old crop that needs to move. We have been huge buyers of corn this week from the farmer on these rallies, and this crop has to find its way into the market. So what we're seeing out here, we're very dichotomy different from you guys. Our basis levels are crashing because of just the smash of grain that's hitting us. We may actually have grain elevators in this part of Iowa that go full prior to harvest because of the grain moving out of loan. You look at the loan levels for Minnesota and Iowa that still have to move, and we've got another train wreck coming in volume within the next 60 days.
Hey, Mitch. Yeah. I noticed CIF values at the were on the way up. I just wondered, I'm not sure where you're located at, but does that have any net effect on your elevators?
Well, don't forget also that we've also seen the tariff rates on a lot of the rail lines go up $300 to $400 over the last 4 to 5 weeks. So as CIF values are coming up, what that actually comes back to the elevator is not always an increase in value. You've got tariff rates that are rising because all of a sudden there's this demand for freight to move this crop that's coming in. So even though we've seen CIF values come up, that really hasn't been the pull here. The pull has been to the processing market. Your processors in Illinois have been coming into Iowa looking for supply. And they are getting some, and they're going to continue to get some. So I guess I caution you guys. I know it's sometimes hard not to look just out the front door, but there is a lot of grain that's got to move, and there's going to be some grain out of Iowa that's going to move east, and is starting to do so now.
Yeah, I wondered about that. And Mitch, I guess what you're telling us is if you can fill it, if you can fill elevators at this time of year before harvest, you're looking at capping prices here pretty good going into August?
You guys will think I'm a nut when I'm going to say this, but I circled to July 15th today and said we made the top of the corn market. And everybody's going to say, oh, that can't be, that can't be. It just looks too bad out here. Rarely, and you can run seasonals, rarely do we make highs in the corn market as you approach late August or into September. Seasonally, it's getting time for a lot of this grain to move. There's a lot of grain still to move. I'm getting calls from Illinois farmers who still have grain to move that want to know what's going on in Iowa because they think they should sell, but they're just afraid to. I'm afraid what's happening here shortly is everybody's trying to move this big crop from last year in the next 60 days to make room for the next one. We've got a little bit of a problem out there in front of us.
We'll end it there. Thanks much. We appreciate it.
You bet.
Mitch Dowson is with Gold Eagle. He's out of Goldfield, Iowa. It's a co-op in north-central part of that state. A final word now from our panelist, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, Mitch sure took the wind out of my sails, I'll tell you what, but I think that it's a reality that there is a big crop left out there and there's a lot left to move. And it's a reality that we've got some hot, dry weather coming in and there's some areas that are really going to be hurting. But we don't want to get too wrapped up in just the weather. We want to look at the fundamentals of that also. So on a little pop during next week, we might want to be some sellers.
And Tom Mann of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Well, I guess I wouldn't argue the point about maybe the highs being in. I thought the highs were in last week, but obviously I was told a different story. The only thing is I think we're going to have isolated areas where we're going to have problems and we're going to have an opportunity in Illinois especially to see some better basis levels where in Iowa they're crashing.
Thanks much, gentlemen, and that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Remember, you can listen to it on our website if you'd like at will.uiuc.edu. Click on AM and then Agriculture. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good week.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.